Hello, guys. This is Langosta here with my good friend Jojo. Members of the Right On the Run and Gun Club, and you are being invited to the first podcast ever. The first ever podcast. This podcast is going to be all about hunting and fishing with an emphasis on California.
So yes.
We're going to be talking about some of our adventures. We're going to get deep into why we're doing the podcast and how you can be a part of it on their different social media channels.
We've got so many ideas, so many topics to talk about. California, hunting and fishing, just from a West Coast perspective, it's going to be great. I can't wait.
Cool. So, guys, let's start off with a little bit of a background on us, and we're going to get to know you, and you'll get to know us. Please, if you haven't done so, make sure you like and subscribe and comment on our topics conversation. We eventually hope to talk about some controversial hunting and fishing things that are happening here in California. Definitely a lot to criticize on our situation here in California hunting and fishing. But many of you may not know that California is a destination location for hunting and fishing.
It is. And even though we're on the left coast, west coast, we're still the best coast. That's right.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about some of the hunting opportunities and fishing opportunities. And really, that's going to be the overarching theme for the show. And Jojo and I are good friends. We're members of the Redondo Rod and Gun Club here in Redondo Beach, California. We have a little clubhouse that's been around for quite some time.
Ages.
And you'll get to see some of the video of the inside.
We'll provide some footage. You know, Langosta being our historian, he's got the pics, he's got the history. We'll be providing that. And I'm sure that everybody's going to be excited to share that with us.
Yeah, it's for many of you that may live in Redondo Beach and have driven by our clubhouse and you've always wondered what it is. Is it a shooting range?
What is it?
Is it an undercover?
It's a spy house.
It's a CIA undercover safe house.
So no, anyway, it's not. It's actually a group. It's a place where hunters and gatherers gather.
That's right. And we meet every Thursday at 8:00. If you haven't done so, please come on by and say hello. All right. So let's talk first. I want to give everybody a little feedback. So Jojo, give me a little bit of feedback on you. When did you start hunting? What do you like hunting? Let's kind of start off with that.
Let's do that because I think it's important. I think it's important that our audience get to know us, who they're going to be listening to. So we'll kick off with that. In the hunting world, and I'll say right off the bat, I didn't get into hunting long ago by any means. I've gotten into hunting within the past 5 years, and I think there's a term within the hunting industry called a late onset hunter. And when I read that in the dictionary of hunting and fishing,
okay,
I fit that that definition.
All right. So wait, hold on. I'm going to look that up while you wait.
Late onset hunter.
Late onset hunter.
Yes.
You made up term.
It's a great term. I've heard it more and more and more and more and more. But, you know, so I'll start from the beginning and then, you know, we'll start with you, Langosta, from the beginning as well. And people will be surprised, basically, my storyline, my timeline from a hunting and fishing perspective. But I was born and raised in Hawaii, born on the island of Maui. So right away, people that hear that think axis deer, pigs, fishing and all that good stuff. But that's not something that I was born and raised growing up in Maui really doing. The fishing part of it did a ton of it, all kinds of fishing. And then basically throughout life, moved away from Hawaii in 2014, came here to California, Southern California, Redondo Beach, and Meat Eater, the show.
What's that guy's name, the Meat Eater guy?
Steve Ranella.
All right.
Steve Ranella.
It's a very popular show.
Very popular show. He could be considered the guru or the god of hunting for at least late onset hunters. For those that have been hunting for a long time, some of them could be controversial, no? He got a lot of people into the industry, but started watching Meat Eater on Netflix, paid my subscription on a monthly basis, and my brother-in-law, who was back home in Hawaii, was doing the same thing. Getting to hunting, it was the Meat Eater, and I remember one day we went to go watch the Star Wars movie at the AMC or whatever it is, Edwards, whatever, you know, Regal, and he and I were on the phone. It was just like, hey, are you watching Meat Eater? Yeah, we're watching. I'm watching Meat Eater, you know, like binging on it. Okay. Because Steve Ranella, he's got the narrator voice.
Yeah.
And there's only so many people that have that.
Sure.
Another person that I know of is Anthony Bourdain, mm-hmm. right?
Absolutely.
And he's got those qualities to where he's telling a story and he's just got that voice that just captures you. So Meat Eater comes on, it's on Netflix, and we say, you know, and in Hawaii, we talk a different lingo. It's called Pigeon. pigeons. Pigeon English. Not the kind you hunt, but the kind you talk.
So how did they describe the experience of the meat eater show?
So in pigeon, how do you describe the meat eater show? Hobra. What's up? What's up?
Now, what does that mean?
What you watching? Hobra is just a start, right? It's okay. The conversation starter.
All right.
Hobra. And then from there, it's the root of the tree. And then the conversation goes on to all these different branches. You watching meat eater? Oh, yeah. What? We should go hunt. Let's go hunt.
Okay.
Let's start it up. Well, what you like to do? You want to shoot a gun or you want to shoot a bull?
Or knife. Because that's a legit thing over there.
It's a legit thing.
Yeah, that's
knife, spear, dogs, all kinds of things. And we'll get more into that because, as you said, that is a legit thing. That is how people in Hawaii are taking pigs, yep. Right? And we got into conversation and it was like, let's go all in. And, you know, as everybody goes, you get into a little bit, you dibble in this, you dibble in that. And it's like, okay, how much of it is going to stick? And at that point, I never knew that it was really going to stick, but did it stick? So we started researching. And the first thing that I did was pick up one of these and Google Redondo Beach.
Yeah.
Hunting, fishing. And little did I know it was going to be that simple because what popped up? Redondo Rod and Gun Club. And to your point earlier, I was like, is this a shooting range? What is going on at this little place? And you're looking at pictures and, you know, you first pull up Redondo Rod and Gun Club and you look at images and you have boar heads with Mardi Gras beads hanging from it. So,
right.
You know, your expectations are kind of like, whoa, okay, what's going on here?
What's going on here?
So we started researching and you know, being 2,500 miles away, just talking story or just having conversations in regard to how are we going to get this? And, you know, and my first decision, and I think it was the right decision, was like, let's move in the direction of bow hunting.
Okay.
And it was kind of getting involved, going down to the store, Googling, kind of finding my brand, figuring out what it is that I wanted to do. I sent an email to the Redondo Rod and Gun Club and instantly within the first day got an email back from some email address that included Speakeasy.
That's right. The webmaster Speakeasy.
The webmaster. Yeah. And he invited me out, let me know what's going on Thursdays, what's going on, what time everybody meets. So I thought to myself, okay, you know what? Let's see where this goes. But at the same time, I'm kind of running game with my brother-in-law, trying to figure out what we're going to do, right? What are some things that we need to do to get into? And all of our resources were Meat Eater on Netflix. And little did we know that we were going to just lead ourselves down this rabbit hole that took us to where we are today, again, 5 years later, but ended up at the Redondo Rod and Gun Club, met some great guys, obviously nervous at first, right? Sure. You join a hunting and fishing club and it's like,
expect.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to go to this club on Thursday. It's like, okay, babe, I'm going to go here. It's from 8:00. I don't know what time it ends, but this guy, Speakeasy, sent an email.
Mysterious Speakeasy.
This is the address. Okay. But met a lot of great guys. And guess what? Here in California, there is hunting and fishing. And immediately, what I found were a group of dudes, guys that love hunting and fishing, talk hunting and fishing. And in a matter of no time, you start to kind of develop these relationships. And I went into this whole thing as a late onset hunter, not knowing anything, right?
Right on.
And I think what a lot of people in my position depend on is kind of the networking. And that networking, no matter where you're at, whether you're joining a hunting club, whether it's work-related, whether it's life-related, it's all about that network.
Sure. But let me ask you this. This is kind of more of an intimate question. Inside of you, what attracted you to this idea of going hunting, especially as an adult? Because, you know, for a lot of us, we got started as with our parents, with their, you know, my dad
right.
took me hunting and
right.
with an uncle, something like that. My uncle always took me fishing. So as an adult, what attracted you to want to do this?
So, you know, I've always been into fishing. Living in Hawaii, like, you've got no choice but to fish, and it's something to do because you live on an island that's only so big. It's like, okay, what are you going to do? Let's go fishing.
Right.
Let's go fishing. From a hunting perspective, you know, and I think it's different for everyone, right? For me, in general, I think there was always kind of something inside me because I'd be that kid on the couch watching TV. Maybe I couldn't sleep in, and I woke up early in the morning and would turn on ESPN because they only had one ESPN at the time. But, you know, there were some dudes out hunting before all of this took place, and they'd just be whispering, I'm going to go over this. And I don't know what it was. It didn't happen for a lot of people, but I can tell you, I mean, that attracted me. I was like, whoa, this seems like adventure. So I think it was really that adventure part, and it was kind of always in me, but I just didn't know how to bring it out.
Okay.
So having the conversation, meat eater, joining the, you know, attending, I wasn't even joining at that time. I was a prospect, but attending the meetings at the Redondo Rod and Gun Club, it was just like, hey, it to me, it just felt natural. It was something that, you know, I've always appreciated, maybe more on the silent side. I never advertised it like, hey, I need to go hunting. I want to go hunting. Yeah. It was just something that I wanted to do. And then I was then provided the opportunity to actually do it that brought it out.
Jojo, what was your first hunt here in California? Where'd you go?
So my first hunt here in California was a part of, let me think back. You know, my first hunt here was a turkey.
It was a turkey hunt.
It was a turkey hunt with in November.
Bow hunt or shotgun?
So all I had at the time was a bow.
Okay.
Never.
So that was the first weapon that you got, or first hunting tool you got?
First tool I got was a bow.
All right.
Well, you know, I wanted to take it back to the ancient days. And sure I thought, you know, no better way to start than.
Dude, you went tribal.
Bow and arrow. You know, I was Googling how to do my own flint arrowheads until I found out that they're made out of metal nowadays.
All right, so you went on a turkey hunt with a bow and arrow.
Went on a turkey hunt just with a bow and arrow.
Just saying, normally people get like a rifle, they learn how to shoot.
Yeah.
I mean, you went straight from to the hard stuff.
Or let's even take it back a little bit. Maybe the first thing that they do is go to the range. You know,
sure.
But, you know, my only experience with a gun of any level at that point, although I always thought they were cool, was at my cousin's wedding in Lanai.
Okay. You just fired guns at the wedding?
We sure did.
That was a rootin' tootin' good
so
time.
So before the wedding, East Sporting Clays, there's a place there that I never realized Sporting Clays was like a golf course. And when you're on the island of Lanai, it's just beautiful. And you've got all these places to shoot. And that was the first time that I shot a gun. But my brother-in-law and I really decided on going, you know, with a bow, archery style. So that's what I packed with me. And it was a club event. And you know, as a part of getting to know everybody, hanging out with everybody, that was the opportunity for me. And the first time I went hunting was a turkey hunt in November with a bunch of dudes from the club.
And where'd you guys go? You got a Paso or something? Where'd you guys go?
Oh, man, we went to the Santa Barbara area.
Santa Barbara area.
Okay. Yep. Picked a campsite and decided, let's go.
Okay. Right on. Man, that's pretty cool.
It's awesome.
One of the things that I think, and you tell me what your thoughts are, but if you're starting, if you want to start hunting, particularly if you're here in California, I think people go to the hunter safety course. They figure out they got to have the hunter safety to get a hunting license. And then what happens? You know, the fact that we have this club is pretty special in the sense that
it's a blessing.
It's pretty cool. It really is pretty cool.
Yeah. And
there's definitely several other clubs, but when I started hunting here in California, it never even dawned on me to go to a sportsman's club and go hang out with them and see where they hunt. Because normally hunting is a very secretive, I mean, you would think like your hunting or fishing spots,
right?
They're guarded like
they're all honey holes.
They're guarded like the National Treasure secrets. Right, like nobody goes. And if I don't know you, I'm not taking you to like my spot.
Right.
I don't know. I always viewed that as a challenge, particularly, you know, when you go to the hunter safety course. I went to mine at Bass Pro. I had to redo it. I had mine when I was younger, and I think I got out of hunting for a few years, and I had to go get my hunter safety thing, and I went to Bass Pro, and it was really, really cool because anybody's been here.
How long ago was this?
Oh, this is probably 15, maybe 16 years ago now.
Okay.
It was long ago enough that Bass Pro has the fine gun room. That's not the fine gun room anymore. It's the classroom for hunter safety.
I've been there.
Yeah. I mean, that room was used to be filled with like $1 million worth of beautiful shotguns and rifles and stuff. I remember I used to like covet, like there were these shotguns that were $130,000 each. Dang. And they were in a glass box. And for those of you that have been there, the fine gun room has got some of the amazing taxidermy. They've got lions up there. They've got all these really cool African game species.
And this is Bass Pros in Rancho.
That's right. Rancho. Yeah. So I went there. I did the hunter safety thing. And I think I took my son there. I got his there too. We did it both together.
Is that how you got permission to go?
Well, you know, look, it helps. I mean, you know, some of the most fun times, if you were to ask me why I went hunting, some of the funnest times that I had was with my dad in elementary school. I was like, I wasn't old enough to have a hunting license. In Florida, we would go to the Everglades and hunt deer in the Glades.
So you started young.
Yeah. My dad, you know, my dad was he liked the outdoors. I think my dad liked the idea of preparing to go hunt more than the going hunting part. My dad's the kind of dude, he would
tell us more.
He would mess with like tents and he'd have all of the stuff, right? He like he'd have tarps to wrap the tents and all this crazy stuff. And, you know, it's rubbed off on me. I have kind of bad packing habits for going camping, but
you've got a big truck.
I have a big truck full of a lot of stuff. So anyway, some of the fondest memories were of my dad taking me and my sister either hunting or camping, mm-hmm. and spending time with him in the woods. Just, you know, he would teach us how to make fire, how to cook outside and all that stuff. So that was for me a very natural way to spend your time off, because he worked, he was a barber his whole adult life. That's what he did for work. And, you know, he worked long days, man. He worked 12, 14 hour days sometimes, but the weekends were always ours. He would spend it with us. So we'd go hiking or camping and stuff like that. And growing up, we didn't have a lot of money. Like he didn't have, you know, like RVs and like all the crap that we have now.
Right.
You know, we didn't really have it. It was just like, you know, like an $80 tent and a little Coleman setup and, you know, and just very basic cooking outdoors. But it was great. I mean, it served the purpose of, you know, just spending time with your family uninterrupted and the bonding time that goes, you know, as you know, the camaraderie and stuff of being out in the great outdoors. It was some of the most special time of my childhood. So, you know, I didn't really shoot my first deer until I was in high school. I think I remember.
And you're still in Florida at this time.
No. So we moved to California when I was probably 14. It was middle school. I think it was the seventh grade. I started here the seventh grade. So I didn't kill a buck until probably my sophomore year in high school. I had shot, like, you know, rabbits and quail hunting and stuff, right, like that. He had taken us to do that, and we were successful. But deer hunting was, as you know, it's kind of hard. It's not very easy. So you really got to watch.
Especially in California.
And so anyway, I on my own, I shot my first mule deer in Mount Pinos here in Southern California, my senior year in high school.
Nice.
You know, I got to tell you, man, I got to admit to you, I've only probably told a handful of people this, but I don't like killing deer. Deer to me are some of the prettiest animals. I love eating deer. I won't judge people for hunting deer. I've shot a lot of deer.
We've gotten to the climax at the very beginning of the show here, Alex.
But I don't, not a big mystery, but I just don't like it. I don't like it. I pass on a lot of deer. Look, we went to Texas a few years ago, and you know, I've hunted Catalina Island for deer. I've hunted quite a bit around California for deer, and I just don't. It always makes me a little sad to shoot a deer. I don't like it. I can't explain it. I've shot like many deer. I just don't like it. I don't have that same feeling about hunting elk, and certainly don't have that feeling about hunting the other animals that I've hunted in Africa as far as playing games. But the deer, I like taking pictures of them. It's true. I don't
know why you haven't told so many people this story.
I hate to sound like such a like a pussy about this, but
your manlyhood has gone away.
Just, particularly does. So, you know, like that's that seems to be the biggest opportunity for actually getting a deer in California are does,
right?
Because you know they kind of hang around. They you
know, yeah.
So yeah, you know I just don't like they don't like shooting the deer so much. But I'll hunt them and eat them. I love preparing them and I love making good delicious dinners out of them. I have a little bit of melancholy after I whack them out.
You know, there's so much dedication. I mean, for me myself, I can only talk from my own personal experience. But you know, finally getting the opportunity to hunt in California and then learning, right? I think a lot of us that are late onset hunters here in California, it's like, okay, well, where's the opportunity? And that kind of seems as a barrier to actually going out and doing something. And that's why I think it's very important that, you know, as you meet people that hunt, and I'll tell you this, like one of my strategies to go out hunting and to learn more about hunting was talking about hunting.
Sure.
You know, because you never know who you're going to meet. And I've got success stories and connections that have been made just simply about talking, you know, talking about hunting and not necessarily being afraid of it, but, you know, having conversation, you know, you meet a person, it's like, hey, my name's Jojo. Hey, my name's Brett or whatever that person is. And sure. It's just like, you know, what do you like to do? I like to hunt. You like to hunt? Oh, I grew up hunting. Really? Cue in the next question. Where are you from?
Right.
Oh, I'm from Texas. You're from Texas?
The Texas boy.
Yeah. Or, hey, I'm from Central California and my family's got a ranch. They got a farm. They got this. They got that. And it's like,
yeah,
nice. And then getting those opportunities is just amazing. It's just crazy. But you just learn so much. And one of the things, like I just said, is just it's about talking to people. And if people are worried about like, hey, there's nothing to hunt here in California, absolutely wrong.
I think it's a massive misconception. You know, when you think of like hunting destinations in the North America and in the U.S., you know, you think of Colorado for elk,
Colorado,
Wyoming for pronghorn, yep. Whitetail, Texas, Oklahoma,
right.
Arkansas, you know, things like that. So
nobody's thinking California. And everything that's going on today, nobody mentions California.
It's true that nobody mentions California. And California has got some of the most beautiful, beautiful hunting destinations.
Right.
If you think about the Central Coast, if you think about the Sierras,
yep.
Even down here by Mount Pinos, kind of northern Kern County.
We're lucky, right? We live in Redondo Beach. It's been raining the past 3 days, and one of the things that I like most about it, you could just look right outside our window and there is the Angeles Forest.
Yep.
You've got the mountains, you've got Cucamonga Peak, you've got Mount Baldy. It's going to be covered with snow, but just right there a couple freeways away is opportunity.
Absolutely. You know, so,
and that's just hunting. We haven't even started to get into fishing, because this is all about hunting and fishing and everything in between.
100%. Yeah, 100%. My favorite animal to hunt here in California is gotta be pigs. I love hunting pigs.
Who doesn't, right?
I don't feel bad about shooting pigs.
They're not like Bambi.
No, those big eyes and the floppy.
So Bambi didn't mean it meant much more to you than a Charlotte's Web.
Yeah, no, not so much, man. I really love hunting pigs, but I'm going to tell you why. Maybe it's a little bit different than what most people think. And for those of you who don't understand hunting, the draw to hunting, the draw to hunting is not the bloodthirst. I want to go kill.
Not at all.
That's so far from the paradigm of hunting. So for me, I think the reason I like hunting hogs in particular is because they are very challenging to hunt, mm-hmm. but they're tough animals and they live in the roughest parts of the forest. They live in the deep canyons, in many cases in higher rugged mountainous areas, right? So they'll definitely be around the valleys to go and eat, but they go back up to the hills, mm-hmm. and they can cover tremendous amount of territory.
They move a lot,
and they're very communal, you know. So when you find one, if there isn't one, there'll be probably 15, 20 of them, 30.
Where's your friends?
Yeah, they got a lot of pals. And I love the way they taste. I love eating wild boar. It doesn't bother me. If you get if he likes any dish, any Mexican or Latin dish that requires meat to be cooked in a stew type thing for a long time to soften up, is like pozole or any of those kind of dishes that you probably make with domestic pig. They make phenomenal.
They do.
Phenomenal stuff.
They do.
So for me, pig hunting is it. They're smart. They're tough. You need a good gun. You need a good shot, and you need to outsmart them. They are smart. They're clever. I mean, as far as a pig can be, but people think the pigs are smarter than dogs.
California's got a lot of them too.
Yeah, they got a lot of them. Central Coast is good. And the other thing too is if you love the topography and you love the flora and fauna, wild hogs have to be hunted. Because of the destruction that they do when their numbers are too big.
Yep.
When you have a good balance, you know, they're really good about rooting, and in certain places you want rooting, you want to cut back on the brush a little bit, but left to their own devices, they do a lot of damage.
That's across the board. I mean, you just look at every state that has hogs, right? Yep. And they can wreak havoc on the climate, on the forest. I mean, going back to Hawaii, I mean, it's a species that is just rooting up everything. And if there aren't hunters, if there's not control, then there's so many native species of plants and animals to Hawaii that just aren't going to be around anymore.
Yeah.
So control is needed. But to your point, like, you know, being able to take one wherever you are and it's good stuff.
It's good stuff.
It's good stuff. Stuff.
It's good stuff.
Some people may say, you know, wild boar doesn't have the fat. You just got to learn to work without it. And there's ways to do it.
Well, I think, look, my thing is I love cooking, right? So I love.
Amen.
For those of you that don't hunt, part of the hunting is not only the experience of going out and the adventure of hunting, but really it's eating. You know, I don't find it as satisfying to go hunt an animal that like some dudes, they love coyote hunting, for example. They love shooting coyotes. They love calling them in. They learn how to do all this stuff. They buy all this equipment.
We know some guys.
Yeah, a couple guys. They're totally into this. It's like their thing. They love hunting coyotes more than hunting deer or anything else.
Right.
I've shot coyotes, but if I'd never shot a coyote again, I wouldn't lose any sleep over it. But hunting hogs is like, that's the fun thing because you get to eat them. You get to, you know, and at the club, we have our big little, you know, feasts of the hunt, right? So and you get to enjoy. And, you know, for those of you who have a family, you know, maybe your wife or your kids don't want to eat that, don't want to eat what you hunt, which is, you know,
kind of
a sad. But when you join the gun club, there's definitely plenty of people that would be more than happy to indulge in the protein, into the free protein. So
that's like one of those pleasures of hunting, though. Like for me, you know, one of the reasons why I like hunting so much and I'm so active in it and I'm passionate about it is, and I think this goes for a lot of people, is it's all about sharing, right? It's all about being able to provide. And that goes back to, I think, ancient times and whether or not it's like ingrained in the human species or what have you. But for me, you know, in part of my joy of the pursuit, as well as actually taking an animal, whether it be a hog, a deer, an elk, is, you know, what I'm looking forward to is not only being able to share that story, but share the fruit of the labor, because it's definitely a labor.
Yeah.
Like hunting is not easy.
No,
it is not easy.
It's not. You got to really want to do it.
You really got to do it. And you got to commit some time because it takes time, right? Like you and I both have families and it takes time away from the family to go do the act of hunting. But like part of it coming out is once an animal is down, the first thing that I'm thinking for myself is like, oh man, I can't wait to cut the animal up, stake it out, put the rest in ground. And then I'm already thinking to myself, what am I going to do with the meat? right? Like, I can't wait to tell the guys at the club, you know, I can't wait to, you know, in you share stories with people that don't hunt.
Right.
And one of the things that always becomes of that conversation is, have you ever ate deer? Have you ever ate wild boar? And most people say no, right?
Never.
Because it's like, I mean, depending on where you live. Now, if I were in some other state that hunting is prevalent, you grow up with it, they're going to be like, yeah, that's like an everyday thing. No, why? That's a dumb question.
Right.
But here in California, most of the time, you're going to hear the answer, no.
Right.
And then what you also get is that for the most part, people are interested. So when you tell them like, hey, you know, I went hunting this past weekend, you know, I got a deer, I'm going to ground them up. And they're going to be like, oh, what does it taste like?
Yeah.
Well, you know, when it's ground, you just add some beef fat, mix it all up and I'll give you some.
Yeah.
And the invitation's for the most part, always accepted. Right.
And positive. I think people give you a pretty good, if they never had it and it's prepped right and it was, you know, kept clean and it would got gutted right away and it was taken care of.
Right.
It's pretty damn good stuff.
And the convincing word for somebody that's like, no, you just got to throw out organic. It's the word of this. It's the word of the past couple of decades, right? You throw out that word like, hey, this is more organic anything you'll ever buy at Whole Foods. Then it's like, well, I'm interested. Like, tell me more. Well, it eats grass.
just browses on stuff. Well, not only organic, you know, if you do the math, by the time you factor in your rifle, your truck, your gear you bought, you know, it's probably about $130 a pound. It's not something you do to save money. It really isn't.
So, it's a hunter's best kept secret is how much per pound that meat costs.
Would you like to have the most expensive protein you ever had? This burger right here is about $75.
Yeah. This is more than the salt based stuff.
Yeah. No. It's definitely like.
It's worth it though.
You got to want to do it. That's the truth. That's just truth. And if anybody ever offers you, anybody that you know is a hunter offers you some and you take a little bit of protein from them that they offered you. You know, you should really look at it as a very special treat because it's not something that's easy to come by.
It is, and in all reality, you know, the first time kind of getting to know you guys at the club and being a prospect, and then somebody kind of like offering like, hey, you want some meat? Sure. You know, when you first taste it, like me growing up and a lot of people, it's like you eat cow your entire life. And you've got to go into it with a mindset of like, hey, looks like cow, but guess what? This isn't going to taste it. And you learn an appreciation for it.
Yeah.
And for me, and I think for a lot of people, you know, when it comes to ground is simple, right? Like I personally can't tell the difference between, you know, deer ground and beef ground. I mean, maybe I can, but I can tell you from a feeling perspective that wild game ground feels a lot better, right? But, you know, from a, you know, cutting up a back strap versus, you know, cutting up a tenderloin or a ribeye from a cow, you know, there is a big difference, but you grow an appreciation for it for sure.
You talk about prepping food and eating the stuff that you hunt. I think as we are successful from season to season and we have more of an opportunity to prepare meats in a different way, I think you get better at it, right? Like there's like Paul Defrost's chili, his deer chili's killer. It's killer. It's really good. I mean,
chili Colorado.
Yeah. And then you've got chili Colorado. There's a whole backstory behind the chili Colorado thing and it has to do with Arizona and
we've got so many
wild horses and hunting javelina and wild cougars. Anyway, so getting back to the food prep stuff, I think if some of the viewers are considering new hunters, considering getting into it, we have at the club, we just restarted the hunter safety. And if you're far from us, you know, there's definitely like consider a local hunt club.
Yep.
And see if you can go over there and connect and click with people and just be patient, you know.
And they're out there.
They're out there. Yeah. Yeah. Just understand like you got to come in with the right attitude, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to have access and, you know, sometimes the clubs are a little bit clicky and things and, you know, there, because look, hunting is, can be a little bit of a dangerous type thing. Depends on where you go.
Yeah.
You're walking around with guns and, you know, you want to make sure that the people you take are going to be safe. So you don't go on a pheasant hunt or a quail hunt and get peppered.
It's happened.
You don't come home with metal in your throat and your neck. You could have a Dick Cheney moment.
But I tell you what, in California, at least you know it's not lead.
That's right. It's shot inadvertently.
There's no long-lasting side effects.
You won't die of lead poisoning. You might just die of the fucking
You might get shot. Picked up in the metal detector walking through TSA at the airport, though.
Yeah. I mean, there's a story to that. But anyway, can't give you everything on the first episode.
Nope.
Save something for number 2 and 3. So anyhow, getting started, go to a gun. I think going to a gun club would be cool. Somewhere you got a good mix of people. And, you know, it's starting to kind of become a thing. I think the meat eater has done a lot for hunting.
Yep.
You know,
I think all of those shows, I mean, Meat Eater kind of made it mainstream. But as I kind of went down the rabbit hole of hunting and fishing and watching it, whether it's on YouTube or Netflix, like Meat Eater kind of opened my eyes to it. And then the more and more you research and the tools and the technology that we have today, you then go into YouTube and you've got guys that are doing it every single day. There's new episodes. You've got, you know, brands like Hushin, Born and Raised Outdoors, and you've got Elk 101 with Corey Jacobson and Randy Newberg. It's like you discover this whole new world that never existed until you took that step. And for a lot of people, and as I mentioned myself, Meat Eater was it, right? And then you get to kind of like learn and discover those things. But to your point, I think a lot of people don't necessarily realize, hey, it's much closer to home than you may think.
Yeah.
And my prime example is just finding, you know, the club that I'm a part of. But as, you know, you go more and more down into like, okay, well, what's around me? Well, guess what? You've got the Compton Hunting and Fishing Club that has just a great, you know, a great history as well, and is super successful and has a lot of members and are doing a lot of great things from a hunting and fishing and conservation perspective. And really what they've done a good job, because I'm living testimony, is involving the youth with their YEP program, right? You know, you get into hunting and you learn that hunting is conservation. You learn, you know, some of the things that are kind of, you know, disrupting is the word that's coming to mind right now, but the opportunities of hunting. So you get tuned into these different organizations like RMEF,
yep,
and you start to join them and you start to kind of, you know, donate to these organizations that are supporting the things that you love to do. And then you start getting stuff in the mail that says, hey, come to our chapter meeting. It's in San Fernando Valley. That's, well, right. Guess what? That's 2 freeways away, yep, which in California is nothing. That's the normal commute to work nowadays.
Sure.
And then you start to learn these things, and really it goes back to the fact that, you know, as you take this on, don't be scared.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't be scared, because there's so much opportunity. There's people out there and there's a network that goes far.
Yeah. Look, and here's the thing. Once you find a place, fellow hunters, whether you meet them at the range when you go, yep, when you go shoot at the range, or whether you meet them at one of the classes, or if you take one of the more advanced hunters ed classes, you'll understand, I think, very quickly that hunters love the camaraderie of being with other hunters. Same thing with fishermen.
100%.
Yeah. The camaraderie is real, and people like to share, because look, it's no fun. I think it's no fun to just go hunting by yourself.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, people have done it. I've done it, you know, but it's
Elmer Fudd did it.
Elmer Fudd did it. That's right. But it's nowhere near as much fun as going with somebody else. And if you've got maybe 3, 4, 5 guys, and, or maybe even 10 guys, you make a trip out of it. It's way more enjoyable. But, you know, the other thing too is like the fun antics of going hunting, and the you end up getting into crazy adventure. You have flat tires, forget your ammo in the car, and you're like 4 miles away from your car. All of these different things that are part of that experience. You don't want to do it by yourself.
Yep.
You just want to do it by yourself.
I mean, it's all about the memory creation, right? Like there's so many stories that people have and so many memories are created that you're able to share. And I think it's just human nature. Like telling a story, recalling an event that made you feel good is something that's special. And hunting provides that. And I think one of the things, and I say hunting, but I really mean like hunting and fishing too.
Sure.
Because as you kind of develop that network, and for me, it was like, you know, you meet a bunch of people. Not everybody is, there's no cookie cutter outdoors person. You know, not everybody likes hunting and fishing. There's some guys that only like fishing. And, you know, they're cool with hunting, but they're not partaking in the sport of it.
Yep.
You've got guys that only like hunting, but they won't go out on a boat because the moment they're out on the boat, they're leaning over the boat, yep, just puking their guts out. Right? Right.
We have a few of those in the club, yeah.
And then you got people that like hunting and fishing. And I think the more that you kind of put yourself out there to kind of meet these people, it kind of gives you the opportunity to do whatever it is that you want. It's kind of like that book that you read as a kid that you get to pick your own ending, right?
Yeah.
Turn to page 16 if you want to go down this path.
Yeah.
Turn to page 24 if you want to go down this path. And here, kind of here in California, like there's so much that you can do.
Yeah. I'm one of them. I like hunting more than fishing, but I go fishing with you guys. I always make a joke that I'm like, I'm the poser fisherman, right? Because I've got nice gear to go tuna fishing and
you're
stuff.
You're just like holding a rod in your hand.
The truth is, if we're out for 3 days on the boat that we rent every year, or that we charter every year, and I catch 5 fish for the weekend, the 3 days, I'm happy meal time. I'm good. I like kind of joking around and being on the boat and photograph people and just goofing off. I mean, it is the fun, the joy of being around other people that are like-minded, that you enjoy the same time off. Like golf, man. I don't do the golf. Hating on golfing.
Golfers, not hating at all.
But that's just not my thing.
No, if it's free, I'll go.
Sure. I mean, I go to the ring. Anyway, that's just not my deal. So, and you need to hang out with other hunting and fishermen, hunters and fishermen, because then your friends that don't fish and hunt don't care about your story. You know, I've been at a dinner party where I brought up the fact that I went to Africa and I spent 3 weeks there and this and that. Nobody asked me anything. And they weren't even curious about non-hunting stuff. Like, they're like, oh, you went hunting in Africa. Oh, yeah, let's talk about, like,
ice cream.
Whatever. Or like, whatever stupid TV show. I don't know. We ended up talking mindless stuff for a couple hours. But my point being that, cool, you go on a great hunting and fishing adventure, and mm-hmm. you just can't go back to your pals at work or your social pals that you go and, you know, your kids maybe play together with their kids, stuff like that. So you can't really have that camaraderie with non-hunting and fishing people, yep, because they just don't
care. It's hard. Yeah. And they don't know.
Yeah. They don't know what they're missing.
No.
No. So let's kind of segue now into what I think is a component of really what the podcast is about, which is really kind of having kind of long format discussions about hunting and fishing in California.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have a favorite place that you like to hunt in California? And if so, what species?
So, you know, that's a hard question to answer because I haven't explored California from the South Coast to the North Coast. So all the places that I have been have kind of been within the home range, right?
Okay.
So when we talk about hunting California, for me, it's the Santa Barbara area, whether it's for turkey, there's deer there, the Angeles Forest. You know, those are all places that I've started off with and I continue to love to hunt. Why? Because guess what? We've all got lives outside of hunting and fishing, right? So, you know, where is it that, you know, I can get the best of all three worlds? Hunting, fishing,
yeah,
work, and then the most important, the family.
Yeah.
And I've got a close range within me, so I love each of those areas. And one of the things that I do love doing, and I'll continue doing is archery hunting. That's okay. The first thing that I got into. I think it's the most challenging. And for me, kind of one of the joys of hunting and fishing is the challenge of it. Absolutely, so yeah. That's kind of one of those things that kind of gets my adrenaline going. It's like, okay, I know that I'm not going to be successful every time, but I know every time I'm going to try hard. I'm going to have a good time. I'm going to put my body to the test. I'm going to feel like crap while I'm doing it. But when I, you know, go home, pop open that first beer, it's like, I did it, right? So in the moment of doing it, it might not feel so good, but in the moment of I did it, it feels fantastic. And just the challenge of like going out there into the country, getting away from the city, because, you know, we live in Southern California. We live in Los Angeles. It's one of the most populated cities in this great nation that we call America. And to be able to drive out and get away from that and then be able to have a bow in my hand with a quiver of arrows going after a deer, that to me feels fantastic. And that's what I look forward to. And talking about Santa Barbara area and going up to the Central Coast and just a little bit further, you know, just the turkey hunting. No. I never knew turkeys existed outside of the freezer in California.
There's a lot of turkeys.
Yeah. I thought Ralph's and Vaughn's was the only place that I'd ever find a freaking turkey.
Yeah. Yeah.
But little did I know, turkeys have feathers, bro. And they don't exist only in November here in California. Yeah. So, you know, going out there and again, I'll bring my bow, but I'll also bring my shotgun. And that to me is fun because there's nothing better than going out there early in the morning, making a cackle, making some kind of noise, blowing my crow call, and then just
it's like, whoa. And when they start rolling, it's the whole hillside.
Oh my God.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
It's crazy.
So I think one of the things maybe we should try and set up for this year is since you like turkey hunting as much as you do, is to go to my favorite place. One of the places that I have a lot of fond memories when I first started hunting, which is Fort Hunter Liggett in King City, California. And what I have here is this is actually the website for Fort Hunter Liggett. It's a military base, U.S. military base. And it's, you know, it's kind of a little bit confusing. The name of it is Fort Hunter Liggett. It was named after a general, a lieutenant colonel, last name Hunter. And
go figure.
Yeah, it's part of, it's a historic place. It's part of the Hearst, original Hearst property. So Hearst, where Hearst Castle is in modern days, which is now a state park, he owned a huge tract of land from Hearst Castle all the way to King City, which is where this military base was. And he actually ended up selling the land that the military base is to the U.S. government.
How far up the coast is this?
This is probably...
I've never been there. I've seen that. Whenever I apply for the California, you know, big draw and the big game draw, I always see Fort Hunter Liggett.
Yeah.
But I've never been there.
So it's, I think it's 250,000 acres.
Wow.
And it's north of Paso Robles, maybe another 2.5 hours. Could be 3 hours. So it's up there. It's definitely the Central Coast. And Fort Hunter Liggett goes from the inland and then you cross the mountains to the ocean. It's a big piece. There's definitely private property around there and there's definitely a public property, a national forest area. But I think that it's one of the, as far as a hunter hunting on so-called public land, it really is an amazing place because it's protected by the U.S. military. So the amount of...
Wait, they offer protection?
They protect deer and turkey. Here's the picture got here of this beautiful turkey. So there's great turkey hunting, great quail hunting.
And is that a real grand turkey? Do they have like a... I mean, those are the most of the ones that we find here in California,
yeah, obviously. Yeah, it's a California indigenous turkey, yeah. You've got nice deer. There's actually also an elk population up there. That's not such a flattering picture, but they got the hogs. They got pigs. It's a tremendously large base. There's restrictions for getting on there. You have to go through the rigmarole. Now you got to go through a background check. You didn't have to do that before. But I think that is a positive. That just means less people are going to hunt there, which means that, like, I've never seen a pig come out of there. This picture was taken in May of last year. That's a huge boar. I mean, look at the size of that boar.
Nice.
Very nice boar. There's another one in here is pretty big. I have never seen one that big there, and I think it's mostly because there's a limited amount of people hunting them. So look at this bad boy here. This is a huge hog right here.
How many times have you gone there?
Oh, I don't know. I've probably gone some seasons. I'd go multiple times. So I don't know. I've probably been there maybe 2 dozen times.
Oh yeah, something like that. That's a lot.
Yeah, I've been there quite a bit.
So did you just like draw? I mean, obviously
you don't need to draw. You just use an A tag, A zone tag. Yeah, and then you know, back in the days when you get 5, 6, 7 pig tags, you shoot as many as you wanted to, as many as you could find. It was a lot harder. The pig hunting there was a lot harder when I was going, because the hogs know. So here, this is the kind of the drawback. There's areas that they're actively training in. You can't go in there, right? Like you don't want to go in there when they're doing the tank at the tank range. Right.
You don't want to become the game.
You don't want to be collateral damage. So
they have insurance for that, but you may not.
I don't think they have any insurance for that. If your car gets blown the fuck out of your fucking, you're done. So you're going to have a hell of a deductible issue with your insurance company. So anyway, the hogs, when there's a lot of pressure, the hogs will go into the areas that there's no pressure, right? So
right.
The military guys, they're not hunting them. They're doing their exercises. So, but I mean, look at these bucks, man. This is a nice buck situation, right? Look at this picture right here. I'm going to pop this up here on the screen. I mean, that's to get 2 bucks that are, I mean, that's a nice mature, it's not a, it's not a 10-year-old buck, but that's a nice 5, 6-year-old buck.
Yeah.
It's a nice buck. You know, it's not a forky. Nice, nice tall horns. Got another one here, a little 3x2. So, you know,
if I got one of those, I'd be stoked.
Are you kidding? That's an amazing deer for California. Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be over my TV right now. Like my wife would not be able to argue with me to say, no, hell no, that's not going up. Yeah. Because that's the conversation, right? Like the first rack that I get is, you know, I'd be lucky if I'd be able to get it into the bathroom.
Yeah.
So it's going to the club.
Yeah, it's going to the club. So look at this bad boy here. So this is your zone, man. This is a bow hunting. I got to tell you, Jojo, for bow, any bow archery season, that thing, there's nobody there. Nobody goes for bow. Nobody. I mean, the place, you're like one of three hunters in 250,000 acres. You're not seeing anybody else around. It's definitely a lot busier.
It can't be that easy, though, to get on there.
No. Well, okay. So the process to get on is,
because I swear there's a tag that I've seen that you've got to draw that tag to be able to access Fort Hunter Liggett.
So the archery, if you want a Thule elk in California,
yeah,
you have the best chance would be to hunt, to put in for Fort Hunter Liggett and do a bow hunt, because they have the most tags,
right,
for Thule elk. And as far as pressure, the elk hardly get any pressure there because they're hardly hunted. There's probably maybe 4 tags a year between either sex and bulls. But I mean, that's a topic of an episode on its own. However, if you do want to hunt elk in California, that's probably the best chance to be.
That's where you want to be.
I think so. I think so.
California high fence.
Yeah.
AKA military.
No high fence, just tank artillery. So I thought you'd get a kick out of this with all these turkey pictures and a lot of hog pictures, man. Looks like they.
Yeah. I mean, I see that. And it's like, you know, people that like doing what we do.
Yeah. Look at this bad boy boar. Look at that thing's beast. Look at the cutters on that
thing.
That's
awesome, man.
I mean, that's a mature boar.
Yeah.
That's a big boar.
And he's not like taking the picture from behind the boar.
Right.
He's over the boar.
I mean, look at this elk. This is a mature elk. Definitely. God, this elk's got to be 10 years old, maybe 11, a little older, you know, a little bit. Look how thick he is.
That's the thing. Like California has wild game.
Yeah.
There's so much land in California, right?
100%.
And, you know, as we get deeper into these podcasts and we start talking about things, we'll start, you know, getting deeper into all kinds of different topics. But you got to think of from a perspective of Western hunting. California is one of the biggest states in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
No. And there is just so much land. And it's like, you know, there's so much rules, regulations. You got to do this. You can't do that kind of out there. But don't let that scare you.
Yeah.
You've got to learn how to navigate.
Sure.
right? 100%. You got to learn how to navigate. And once you're able to do that, then I go back to like the key word. I feel like I've said it 1,000 times already. It's like finding the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Opportunity is the word there. And there's all kinds, and that comes in all kinds of different forms, right? You've got, as a California resident, being able to apply for the big draw, getting a pig tag, getting a deer tag, buying your upland game license. And then, oh, by the way, you've got places like the Tejon Ranch or other areas that provide you the opportunity where, you know, if you really want it, it's there for you.
Yeah.
It's there. And many people, you know, there's always that argument, oh, there's Northern California, Southern California. Well, you know, we're not that right now. We're all of California. So, you know, even for us here in Southern California, there's a whole different part of the state that butts you up against Oregon and Nevada and Arizona, where there's other opportunities there.
Absolutely. I think we're
in a prime location, man.
I think so. I think I think it's really just underrated and maybe to a certain extent underutilized. I think if more people hunted and supported, so getting back to kind of one of the virtues of hunting, and this is probably the biggest skewed thing out there from the anti-hunting people or really people that just don't know anything about hunting, is the value of the conservation component. You know, hunters, with the dollars that we spend on tags, whether it's the fishing licenses or deer tags, even the tax that we pay on ammunition, that money is specially allocated for the management. That's what funds the Fish and Game Department in California, right? So the ammo tax and the license fees. So that historically has been the backbone of funding the different activities that they engage in. Mostly, look, what is indisputable is animals need two things. They need habitat and they need access to feed and water. They need those things. And when you lose habitat, that's when you lose animals. It isn't overfishing or over hunting. It's mostly some type of damage to the habitat, mm-hmm. whether it's putting condos on top of it or a road or something else that messes with the migration patterns of the animals. That's really your loss, or some type of a pollution into the stream or the coast, right? But seldom is it overfishing or overhunting, and certainly overfishing and overhunting, mostly I would say anything that's commercial fishing and commercial hunting, right? When you think of like us losing the pronghorn antelope in California, there was the same amount of pronghorn antelope in California that there was in other parts of the U.S. Mm-hmm. We practically have none. We have some, but I don't even think they're in.
It's a rare sighting.
It's not. There's not very many. But the pronghorn in California were commercially hunted almost into extinction. It was not hunted. That's not the right way to say it. For those of you that don't know, when you think of sport hunting, it isn't the sport of killing an animal. It was used as a definition to distinguish it from commercial meat harvesting, right? So in the times where people didn't raise cattle, goats, or sheep for food, they would be shot out in the wild, and that land didn't belong to anybody other than, you know, the natives. And there was a distinction between people that shot animals for fur to sell them or to sell the meat versus people that shot that hunted for sustenance or for sport hunting, for what we do, mm-hmm. which is not glorifying the death of an animal. It's really a way of life, a way of conserve the natural resources and being part of the natural world in a very intimate way, which is that's the difference, right? That's the definition. People have distorted that whole sport hunting into like people that just chase deer for the size of antlers and stuff like that.
Because I think also it's like a hunter really feels a part as if they're a part of conservation.
Yeah. And I think that's the main. That should be, if you talk about, like, if you were to teach a hunting 101 class, or if you were to teach hunter safety, mm-hmm. I think that the component of the conservation has got to be a major topic of discussion in the teaching, because the wildlife needs the support of resources. They need the support of enforcement of hunting laws and regulations and limits on what you're going to take. And you have to fund that. You have to buy trucks and you have to fund salaries. And
it's not cheap.
It's not cheap. It's a big state. There's a lot of people out there that engage in that. So the involvement in it is a key component to it. Look, for those people that say, oh, the hunting, it kills off and reduces the size of the herds and this and that, look at Texas. Texas has more hunters per capita, particularly when we're talking about hunting in Texas, you're talking about whitetail hunting. Why is it that they have more deer now than they've ever had? It's because Texans, and by the way, Texas has very little public land. Most of all hunting property in Texas is private owned. If you want to hunt Texas, you buy a lease.
Know someone,
or you buy a lease, and that's how you hunt in Texas. You don't just show up, honk your horn, and you're ready to go hunt whitetail in Texas. That's not going to happen. And you're not going to look on your little app.
You may be the hunted if you do that.
You're going to get peppered. At the very least, you're going to get a little peppered. So this idea that you're just going to show up in Texas. So why are there so many deer in Texas? Well, it's because people spend millions of dollars every year developing habitat.
Yep.
Developing habitat and keeping people off the property. When you drive through Texas, you see fences and fences and fences. And some of them are you know, high fence where people have exotics, but most of them are cattle fences where the deer hop in and out of a bunch of different property. And you're keeping the poaching down to a minimum. Maybe they don't have as many resource officers, but because there's so much private property, they keep the landowners control who gets in and out of there, right? So they have deer stands. They make water ponds for them. The state of Texas would go bankrupt spending the kind of money that private landowners spend on creating habitat. That's just a fact.
Yeah, and they take care of their animals too.
Yeah.
I mean, like, everybody's into it.
Yeah.
Like, you can't go into a 7-Eleven here in California and buy a bag of 20, like a 50-pound bag of corn.
Yeah.
But you go to Texas and you eat.
Gas station.
If you don't have corn, it's like, why are you still in business?
Everybody's got a pallet of corn outside. Everybody. Gas station, 7-Eleven, whatever.
Man.
Grocery stores. You go in and get donuts and steaks. You got feet outside the front.
But that's like the big fight in the hunting world right now is like, you know, there's so many different fights that everybody's on board with, and one of the hugest things is habitat and access.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you've gotta, like you said, you've gotta have that habitat. You've gotta have the land mass where it's gonna support the animal population.
100%. Yeah. For a long time here in California, you can't do the things to develop a deer herd like you can in Texas.
Yeah.
In Texas, if you hunt on private property, you still got to get a license, a deer license and a deer tag, right? In fact, I think you get like five. You get five deer.
Yeah.
With one license.
Yeah.
So why? Because there's a lot of them. Why? Because the habitat is an environment where the habitat has been created for them to thrive. They've got thick cover. They've got water and they've got feed. They don't just eat corn. By the way, you know, many of you may fight this. Oh, the deer should be totally natural and all that stuff. There's parts of California where deer starve at mass. Like, you can lose a third of the herd if it's a bad winter. Okay. I don't know about you, but that's not good.
No winter and it's all drought.
Yeah.
We've been lucky these past couple of years. I just can't wait. I mean, all the rain that we had last year and the rain that we're getting now.
Yeah.
I'd imagine that we're going to have a few good years ahead of us.
We're going to have a great hatch for quail over.
Oh, I can't wait on that.
Y'all, the guys were telling us that they had two hatches in one season.
And this is where you guys went hunting just a few months ago.
Yeah. Well, we went last fall. I think one of them said even that they may have had a third hatch. Jojo, I've never seen. Look, when I've gone a 400 Liggett, I've seen a covey of 20, 30, and I've probably bumped two or three coveys, okay? We bumped a covey that was 100. 100. Honestly, when we bumped the covey, there was probably 7, 8 of us in the field. I didn't hit one because I didn't know which one to shoot. I've never had that problem, right? You get one or two or three or four going one way or the other, and you know, you pop one of them, right?
Right.
There was so many. I was in. It took me. It was a delay, and I was like, "What the?" I couldn't believe it. I could not believe what I was seeing. I mean, there was from peripherally, from my left to my right eye, there was there were birds in the air. I've never seen anything like that. Never seen anything like that. Never heard of something able to one day bump. Did we just, what happened? To in one day to be able to bump 10, 12 coveys?
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah.
And if you go, you know, when we first went to this ranch, this is just outside of, on the other side of Bakersfield. It was probably what, like a 2.5-3 hour drive or something like that. Wasn't even that far. We get there and the guy had just harvested his wheat. And I guess he sells, it's organic, sells it to the local dairies up there.
There's that keyword.
Yeah. Organic. So, I mean, he doesn't put any fertilizer or pesticides in his field, which means that his water's clean, doesn't have a bunch mm-hmm. of stuff running into the waters. So it's a pretty pristine place. I think it's 3,000 or 4,000 acres, something like that.
Nice.
And as we're going up and down these ravines, you know, you start seeing like, man, it's pretty rugged back there. And, you know, Paul had warned me about it. He's like, dude, we're going to do a lot of walking up and down hills. And I'm like, well, I'm good for the first, you know, 40 minutes, you know, and I'll pick the hills that I go up and down due to my robustness. You know, I'm not doing that stuff, that kind of stuff anymore. Anyway, so we break like the first covey. It was this kind of like opening. We had kind of gone up and down. This guy basically, you know, drives us around in his ranch truck. And I mean, we break a covey that's like a solid 30, 40.
Wow.
Quail.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude.
And you guys have hunted there before and haven't seen coveys like that.
I haven't hunted there. That's Paul's, for the last 3 or 4 years, that's been Paul's little honey hole.
Yeah.
He really hasn't shared that with people. But for whatever reason, he decided to do that. And I think it was six of us showed up for this.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I was not able to, but I missed it.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's spectacular. We saw more birds. Like when you pay for a planted bird hunt and stuff, you'll see birds. But normally when we go into the national forest, it's kind of hit and miss, right?
Yep.
Sometimes you'll bump at two or three coveys and they'll be, you know, you'll say, man, there's a lot of them. But to be able to be bumping coveys every day, the entire day, I've never done that before. Yeah. Never done that before. So that was way cool.
I gotta imagine that was a great experience. And you know, I go back on what we were talking about maybe about 20 minutes ago, 30 minutes ago, and you had asked, like, you know, what's your favorite place? What's your favorite animal hunt? And I don't know why, but it just happened. But totally forgot about quail.
Yeah.
Like quail to me, okay, I love hunting quail. And what it is, and I can imagine if you're bumping 30, 40, 50 birds, the sound of that, like,
yeah, it's loud,
exhilarating. Yeah. Because even when you're hunting just, you know, out in the field and you hear one quail,
yeah,
the adrenaline rush is like, oh my God, you just hear that.
Dude, it spooked the shit out of the dogs. The dog never seen that many birds. The dog thought he was going to get bird napped.
Bird helicopters taking off, and you're just like, what in the world is happening? And you don't know when it's going to happen, but when it happens, that moment is like, wow. This is freaking crazy. Then the next thought is, where did it go? Because the first time you see it, you didn't hit it.
No, for sure.
It's like, where did it land?
The dog, there's, you know, it's shooting. It's like, well, everybody has like a moment of awe, and then they're like, okay, let's go shoot him. So you start, the shooting starts, pop, 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 pop. And the fucking dog's looking at everybody, looking at the birds, looking at the sky. And he's like, what the fuck do I do? What the fuck do I do? I told the breaker, I'm like, hey, bro, put the dog on the leash, bro. And I don't know why, you know, I'm sorry, I gotta throw some people in the bus, but so under that condition with so many birds, you can't have the dog loose, right? The dog is in quail heaven, right? The dog dreams of days like that. And he just, you know, it's like a kid at the candy store without any parents around. He's just He just didn't know what to do. So eventually the dogs got so jazzed up. They're like, hey, you old fat hunters, I'm going to leave you behind and looking for these birds. And, you know, you see the dog in the horizon, like, you know, a block away, two blocks away. And there's like a whole cloud of birds. And I'm like, dude, the birds are gone. The damn dog spooked. Put the dog on a leash. Let's walk over together.
That's when the dog becomes decoration rather than a tool.
It was kind of frustrating. It was elation of joy coupled with frustration of, guys, I understand that you may not know what to do because you've never seen this many fucking birds, but this is the time that you got to leash the dog up.
Yeah.
And let's walk up, shoot some birds, send the dog to go find the birds, and everybody gets a happy meal. But that didn't happen. And
you know, after this podcast, I'm going to grab a happy meal.
Yeah. So it was joy and frustration at the same time. And, you know, I guess you don't really get all that mad about it because, you know, there'll be another covey.
Yeah.
You know, after the fourth or fifth covey, you're like, yeah, there'll be another covey.
But I mean, as we're talking about this, right? And there's a lot of topics to talk about California hunting, and I think this is a good realization that there's so much out there when hunting quail. If no one has ever seen a quail in person, it is an amazing animal. It's cool. I just won't call it a bird, even though it's a bird.
Cool bird.
It's a freaking cool animal.
Yeah.
And when you see them, when you see how they act, how they kind of take off in flight, when you hear them, when you hunt them, and then to be successful and then just holding that bird, it's like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's cool.
This is attracting. And it's a beautiful bird. And like, as a California resident now, like the California quail, it's freaking amazing.
Yeah.
And hunting them is so much fun. And it's one of those things, like, you know, you can do it by yourself. You can do it with your dog.
Yeah.
But it's best done with friends.
For sure. 100%.
Like, it is a great time. Yeah. And that story, that experience lasts a lifetime.
Yeah.
I took a couple of my friends here from Redondo Beach out a couple of times, and they're not avid hunters, but I want to, you know, they have interest in it. So it's like, okay, well, if you have an interest in it, you know, I'm not going to wait for you to ask. I'm going to invite.
Sure.
Like, let's go.
Yeah.
And I took them out quail hunting one day, and we all had a blast.
Yeah.
And it was just like, wow. And guess what? One of my homies that, like, I took out, he's taking his kid now.
Yeah.
And it's like spreading that experience and just sharing it.
Yeah.
And we always talk about, we had a barbecue at his place down the road kind of just not too long ago before the quail season hunted. And it was just like, okay, you know, and we're on text thread, right? We're SoCal hunters. That's the three of us, right? And it's just like, hey, you know, can we use your house to barbecue? Let's get the wives together and set some dates on the calendar. So we literally came up with an excuse to barbecue
right. And
then really set hunting dates to go hunt quail because it's just so much fun.
Yeah.
And it's just that being out again, out in the open, in the outdoors, walking. And guess what? We don't have any dogs. So our success isn't going to be as great as if we had dogs.
Sure.
But we still went out. Yeah. And we walked in a line,
yeah.
And we found birds.
Yeah,
and that moment when you hear that first,
it's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy,
and it's like addiction.
Yeah,
instantly because you want to hear that again. Like there's nothing that excites me more than just kind of hearing that.
Yeah,
that flapping in the wings, and it's so distinct.
Yeah,
when you go out there, it's not like a sparrow is taking off, and it's like, oh, there's a bird. Nah, when you're quail hunting and you hear that quail for the first time, it's like, wow.
Yeah, for me, you know, normally, so as you know, you go quail hunting kind of first light, and for me, always the morning of, even whether you're duck hunting or you're quail hunting, that kind of like that little window of sun up when the sun's kind of starting to warm up and you get a little bit of a breeze and that dew through the grass, like that whole part of the morning is my favorite part.
Isn't it awesome?
Yeah. It's pretty cool. You start walking through the grass. You can start feeling your boots, your pants getting wet from the morning dew.
Yep.
And man, it's just, that's pretty cool, man. It's pretty cool.
And
the light in the morning.
As you describe that, like, to me, one of the things from my own mental perspective, I look at that, and what makes me appreciate it more is that not everybody is doing it. And you feel like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, everybody needs to see what I'm seeing right now. But while you're in the moment, you just feel so lucky to be there.
Yes.
You're there. Yes. You know, you start driving when the sun is down. You know, you start your drive when you're normally going to sleep.
Sure.
And you're on that road, and then you get to that point where you're walking out into the field. You know, if you need a headlight, you got your red light on, your green light on, not to cause all that light, but then you're going out, and then as that sun comes up, it's like you take in that moment, and you just, it's naturally healing and just makes you feel so freaking good. There's nothing like it. To be able to see those colors as the sun comes up from the east, and then when you're out all day and to see the same colors, but in a different format setting in the west.
Yep.
That special, man.
It's really cool, man. I think, you know, people, if you think about all of the stuff that all the energy that people exert in trying to relax and trying to do like yoga or I don't know, whatever, aromatherapy or whatever the hell you do. If you live in a condo and like,
that's not going to be part of any one of our episodes.
No. But people spend a lot of energy in trying to not do anything.
Yeah.
And all it takes, man, is like what you said, is to get up early, get up a little bit, you know, have a cup of coffee and get up and go for a walk right before the sun rises.
Amazing.
It's a lot of bang for your buck.
It definitely is.
Well, guys, I think that this is a good segue to wrap up our show. If you like what you've heard, please like and subscribe. We're going to be posting some links on here so you can see other where we will also be posting on social media.
We will.
My name is Langosta and Jojo. Jojo, any closing remarks?
No, I just like to thank everybody for joining us. And this is the start of a journey, man.
Jojo, I am happy that our first step was.
I am happy
that we took the first step and we finally do. We've been talking about it for a long time. So
we have been.
We need your support. Please like and subscribe. Also, put on the comments topics that you'd like to hear more information about.
We've got plans for a lot of guests that are going to be coming on. We're going to be talking about hunting. We're going to talk about fishing. We're going to be talking about the outdoors. We're going to be talking about how to get families involved, you know, how you get involved. And, you know, we are going to be California-centric, but by the same time, we realize that we're going to have to expand. And people, when we talk about that keyword opportunity, you know, we'll share that with you and we'll share our stories. We'll have some special guests. I think everybody will appreciate, enjoy, and we can't wait to share more information and share more stories. It's going to be a great time.
Right on. Thanks, Jojo. All right, guys. See you later. See you on the next one. Bye-bye.